The Supreme Court takes up a case claiming that PrEP leads to homosexual behavior. This is TFG Unbuttoned.
It's the Focus Group Unbuttoned with Jim Bennett and John Nash, an off-the-cuff take on politics, pop culture, and current events.
Welcome to TFG Unbuttoned. John Nash here with my good friend and co-host, Tim Bennett. FocusGroupRadio.com is our website. You'll learn about us there, including our partner here on TFG Unbuttoned, Critics' Choice Video, America's classic movie and TV authority since 1987. They've been with us since the start of TFG Unbuttoned, and we would very much like it if you could visit their site by going to ours, FocusGroupRadio.com, and clicking on the Critics' Choice Video logo. Go down the rabbit hole there. They have an amazing selection of product. We'll be visiting with them a little later in the podcast. Mr. Bennett, it's the day after the inauguration. We have a new president. We don't need to talk about that because we spent a lot of time talking about it beforehand. And we have some snow. And so how's things by you?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I was trying to figure out if the Bidens were coming here or not. They didn't really say where they were going.
I thought they were going to South Carolina first after the, I thought they flew down there and then back up to Delaware.
Well, they were there over the weekend.
Oh,
South
maybe
Carolina.
I got screwed up then, yeah.
But I had heard some heavy equipment going down the street, which usually the Department of Transportation, DelDOT, brings these enormous...
DelDOT, Delaware Department of Transportation,
DelDOT, brings these enormous dump trucks loaded with sand that they park at various entrances to where his beach house is. So I heard those early this morning. So I didn't know if they were just doing that just in case to set them up, or I don't know. But I haven't checked. I haven't seen anything. I'll miss the motorcades going by. I used to like the motorcades came by the house. Everybody be out there waving. And
yeah, but didn't they do this thing where they came down your street beforehand and they had to like look at everything to make sure that it was safe for the motorcade to go by?
Yeah, they would mark the cars. So if you had a white X on your car, it's usually like a soap, you know, X on your car. So they would run the plates to see where they were attached to. And then if there was anything suspicious vehicles, they would do an extra check. And then they even went through the recycling bins and the garbage cans that would be out there. And they'd also put marks on them as well to make sure that they were checked. You know, they go so damn fast. You know, they always use the decoy. Nobody ever talks about that, but there's always two cars. You could be in one or the other, and there's an actual impersonator like him sitting there with a suit on. And yeah. So you never know which car he's in. Usually you're looking at the first one, and then they're in the second one or vice versa. And they're always moving around, so you never really knew. And they go quite fast. I mean, there were times I was actually shocked. We're in a tiny little road that's, you know, a 15-mile-an-hour, you know, kids, dogs, everything. And there were times where they would be going 60 miles an hour down here. At least it felt like they were flying, and which I don't think is safe, but that's me.
That's me. You know, we were watching The Crown the other night. Sometimes when we'll finish a series or we don't want to do something, so we'll watch something we've watched before, like The Crown. Right. We were watching an episode from the final season. And it's a memory, a flashback that the Queen has to when she and Margaret went out to a club called the Ritz when D-Day, when the war was won. And there's a scene where the two young women, the two princesses, Margaret and Elizabeth, are walking back to Buckingham Palace. The streets are empty, and it's just the two of them walking up this enormous avenue towards the palace. And you look at it and you say to yourself, I guess that could have happened in the 1940s, right? And maybe it did, but nowadays, like it pursuant to this conversation of how of the motorcade, the decoys, all the work that goes into just moving someone from A to B these days, watching that, you know, it reminds me of just how far we've come or how far we've stepped back, because it should be the case that you should be able to walk in public without being, you know, afraid of something, but not the case, right?
Well, I think back in the day, it might have been the Truman administration was the last one, but Inauguration Day, anybody could go. You could walk up into the White House, walk around, walk through, go greet them. There were no gates. There was no nothing. That it was the quote-unquote people's house. And they would welcome whoever wanted to come in. Is the way they would describe it, that's how the inauguration was. It wasn't until, I think it was the Truman administration, that they actually put up a fence and put up a gate around the White House. But But then you hear about people who have snuck in anyway. There was that crazy couple that snuck in at the Obama first state dinner. Yeah. You know, how the hell they got in is beyond me. Although I got in, to pee with George Bush.
I was just going to bring that up. That were the how you you guys so, they're having. It was it him and who else? Was it Dick Cheney or?
No, it was him and.
It was the first Bush.
The first Bush, and I want to say it was someone who it was a very close friend of his, and I want to say he was an ambassador because they were joking about all the you know the falling of the Soviet Union, and then there was Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan. He goes, gave me the opportunity for a lot more ambassadors. So, you know, he do political favors. But that's when he was talking about his prostate and about
that's
how
right,
Barbara,
that's right.
Barbara made coffee and whatever. And yeah, I still laugh about that. I should write that down. I did write it down somewhere, but I should write it down more thoroughly as to what happened. And I just remember Bush looking at me in the mirror and never even acknowledging really I was there other than, I guess that's enough talk about my prostate.
You know, like father, like son, because the two of them had kind of a wry sense of humor, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how perfect. Total non sequitur. Last week, I was sitting at my desk doing work, and suddenly everything that I was doing online quit. And a message came up saying, internet unavailable or Safari can't connect to do this, whatever. So I started to do stuff, and I rebooted this modem thing, which wouldn't reboot properly. And Bob's getting nervous. And it's like 7 at night, right? 6:37. And I'm thinking to myself, everything looks fine, except I thought, I bet it's the modem. I bet I'll have to just go to the store tomorrow, because we're pretty close to a Spectrum store, and switch the modem out. But I called customer service. I got this really nice guy named Chris, who is based in San Diego. We chit-chatted. I started telling him what was going on and where I was at and troubleshooting. He goes, well, you've done most of my work. He said, why don't you apply for a job at customer service? I'm like, no.
I've unplugged it. I've waited 10 minutes. I plugged it back in.
The whole thing. And he said, okay. I said, I think it's the modem. I think the modem's fried. I could return it tomorrow. I'm not far away from a store. No, I'd rather have someone come out and check that to make sure that it is in fact that. And hey, I have an appointment available. He goes from 8 to 9 at night. I'm like, wow. Yeah, sure. The guy comes like at 8:15, super nice young man. Comes and as we're in the met him in the lobby of our building because our doorman had been at dinner, and I'm taking him up the elevator, and I just casually said to him, I said, boy, you know, you should think of writing a book after your career at Spectrum. I said, because you could probably write a whole interesting book about the houses and the apartments you've been in. Whoa, John, he goes, let me tell you. He goes, or maybe I'm not going to tell you. He goes, it would blow your mind. And I'm like, really? And then so he walks into our apartment. He looks around and goes, wow. And I'm like, what? He goes, super neat and clean. And I walked into the area. I showed him where the connection points were. And I said, my guess is the modem. He said, I'm going to find out right now. So he tested the connection to the modem, which was active. The modem apparently was dead. But he did a bunch of stuff, put a new one in, updated it. It was all done in like a half hour. We were back up and running. I only bring it up because I know you've had nightmare scenarios down there, but you know, I'm sometimes amazed when things just work correctly. And the second part of that is there are stories out there that people have, service people, that I would love to hear.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody must have written a book, don't you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's been books about the airline industry, about being at the hotel, you know, working in a hotel. Something tells me there's something, unless every story is about going into a hoarder. I mean, is that possible?
Well, or they might get propositioned by somebody. Yeah, we have to look at that. That's a good idea. That would be a good one to look at.
Yeah, we'll see. I just thought it was kind of one of those. And he had, he used to be an electrician before he went into work at Spectrum, loved being an electrician, was very proud of some of the buildings he helped wire. But then he said, you know, it's one of these weird industries where you're lied to a great deal. Yeah, you'll be on the job. You show up and then the job's not happening. And I just thought, well, welcome to the world of contract work, right?
Yeah.
You and I.
So did you not have internets for a whole day then?
No, only for 3 hours.
Oh, so it was actually you called and he came that quick?
That night. Yeah, like literally I have an appointment. And when he came in, I said, are you on OT? Oh, you know the terminology. It's overtime for sure.
Yeah, let's take all the time you need.
There you go. All right, folks, moving ahead here on TFG Unbuttoned, we introduce you to three stories you may or may not be aware of, and we flesh them out here for you. The first one I teased at the beginning of the, at the start of the podcast, and the headline reads, it's from LGBTQNation.com. The headline reads, Supreme Court takes up case claiming Obamacare promotes homosexual behavior. I can summarize this pretty quickly by saying this is another one of these religious liberty cases, or to put a finer point on it, using religion to push back against something that you feel you shouldn't be having to deal with in society. And in this case, the Affordable Care Act has built into it preventative medical care. And that could be screenings for breast cancer, colon cancer, all this stuff, including PrEP, which is to prevent and you know, put you out of harm's way with HIV/AIDS. You would think that no one would object to that because that is a issue that affects the heterosexual community as much as it has affected the homosexual community. And the long-term costs of caring for AIDS, if you in fact contract HIV, or you know, is probably greater than taking PrEP. But let's not think about the economics and the smart, you know, thing to do when you have a culture like this. Let's instead claim that if you are Christian and you own this company called, I think the guy's name Braidwood, and he owns some kind of a consulting firm. Did I get that right, Tim?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and you're right.
I almost don't even care Braidwood about what the guy does, because basically, oh, it's Braidwood Management Inc. versus Becerra. And so they claim that the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force, which issued the recommendation that the Affordable Care Act cover PrEP and all these other things, is an organization not mandated by the Constitution, and therefore by the appointments clause, therefore they have no ability to do this and it should be rescinded. Lower courts, in fact, looked at this and said, well, okay, maybe for this one company, you don't have to do it. But then there was a change up at the Fifth Circuit. You know, when that happens, the Supreme Court has to look at it. I'm just like scratching my head at this because this is just stupid to me. The only reason they're doing it is because they associate PrEP with homosexual behavior, right?
Right. No, it's insanity. And PrEP, as you noted, is having access to it is credited for reducing HIV and STI transmissions. And the, you know, the STIs is because you would get checked more often. So yep, not that exactly. It prevents STIs, but you know, the insanity here is that obviously someone didn't do their homework. And we all know that HIV in many instances is more prevalent in the straight community now than it is in the particularly gay community and people of color. So this really, so the religious exemption or the religious aspect of this is just absurd, as you noted. And it reminds me of, you know, they'd gone after Viagra, they've gone after birth control, they've gone after now the weight loss drugs. And so this is just another one where they're trying to make an issue out of something that's really just a preventative health measure, which in the long run would be helpful for keeping expenses down for everybody across the board. But I shook my head on this. It reminds me of the idiots who don't want Obamacare, and then they get mad and realize that Obamacare and the Affordable
Care is, in fact, the Affordable Care. I'm chuckling, but this is really no laughing matter. Yeah. This is just really stupid public. Stupid. This was smart public health policy that helps remove an issue that can cause a lot of horrible things later on. And yes, there's behavioral changes that occur as well, but, you know, I don't know. I'm amazed at 2020. I guess, you know, Tim, I say to Bob often, you know, I'm a big sci-fi fan. I love the idea of having a cocktail in orbit and the whole bit. We're not getting there. If we ever make it out of this century, I'll be really surprised because of this kind of crap, right?
Science. Well, Elon will take you up.
No. No, he'll put you in a test flight.
Right, you got 265. What is it, 265,000? You can take a flight.
There you go. Okay, our next one here is literally just broke in the last few days. Tim sent me the article. We happen to know a lot about this from the work we've done with our agency, but the headline reads here, The Trevor Project to Undergo Layoffs and Restructuring in Major Transformation. And this came to us from NBC News. And so Trevor's CEO, a woman named James Black, They claim that they need to readjust and retool the organization in light of the fact that they are spending a reported $105 million have $105 million in expenses against a reported $87 million in revenue, which is up from $67 million in revenue, but still it far exceeds what they're collecting. So this is dire times and they need to do this quickly. And so they're going to be streamlining and correcting things. I could tell you a lot of what the article said. A lot of it was technical and was basically looking at their public tax returns and listening to some of the statements that were made. But I'm going to leap ahead and let Tim jump in here as well. I think this is typical mission creep. And what I mean by that is simple. The Trevor organization was a hotline to help prevent suicides from LGBTQ teens and youth. And it was a way for them to reach out for help. They've done a lot of other things that are great on top of that. But I always think when you lose sight of the mission, things get a little murky.
Boy, you're awful nice. I was going to say, someone let us know, or let me know anyway, since you're being nice about it, what many of these high-profile nonprofits do besides raising money to keep them afloat and pay their inflated salaries, right, and keep themselves in nice offices. And whether it's GLAAD or I'll name a few, HRC, the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, IGLTA, which you and I know, the travel group, Out and Equal, they all meet once a year, right? They have a big dinner, they jerk and scissor each other off, but they never get down to business. Mm-hmm. And I think they just raise money from these corporations. They can't speak ill of them because they fund them. There are some like Sage and Trevor for a while, I think before, as you noted, mission creep, that actually did do work and actually did provide services to the LGBTQ community. But you and I have asked this question of some of the corporations that are sponsoring these large nonprofits. What have they done? And I'm not so sure. Do you know what GLAAD's done over the last year? Do you know what HRC's done? Do you know what IGLTA's done? Do you know what Out and Equal's done? Have they done anything besides raise money?
Well, GLAAD issued a couple statements on Instagram recently. Sarah Kate Ellis was talking like she did a multi-stage thing on Instagram about how horrible all these DEI things were and everything. But this was one of the rare. Trevor was, and still is, a very on the ground kind of organization that really does effectively help people. I think last year they answered over 500,000. Calls for help, and that's an incredible amount of emergency calls and ways to help people. When Tim and I did some work with the organization via a client of ours, they were thinking of becoming a content company, creating documentaries, profile. This is, of course, 2 or 3 years ago, right. So it was a little different times. But I just go to this one thing here. One of their employees actually said something towards the bottom. And she said here, a continued interest in making unit members suffer and bear the brunt of hardship when it comes to a financial crisis that is informed in part by the incoming Trump administration, but also has in part to do with mismanagement of our organization's funds. I think when someone who's working on the front lines or working deep in the organization actually comes out and says mismanagement, that means there's chatter going on, that they observe things going on. They're like, what are they spending that on? You know what I mean?
No, you're exactly right. They decided they wanted to go into content creation. They were going to do long form documentaries. They were doing lots of other things non-related to a call center for suicide prevention. Decided they were going to go international. So yes, it was mission creep. The other thing that I did a little bit of math. And so of the $105 million in revenue over the year, and they have noted in the article that they have 600 employees. Well, when you divide the 600 by 105 million, that's $175,000 a person.
And you know they're not all making that.
Not even a tenth of them. I would say, some of the top 10 or 15, 20 people are probably making some astronomical salaries. But beyond that, that the counselors, and they're probably a lot of them are remote.
Yeah.
I don't think they're housing these big call centers. So you're telling me, at $175,000 per person, even if you added in healthcare and some of them are unionized, so there's mismanagement of funds. It's that simple. And what they are,
you could call it mismanagement or
misallocation, whatever.
Yeah. Like, or a bad idea, but we spent money on it. Yeah.
Well,
I hope that they right size the ship and that they get the finances in line, because they're still providing an incredibly valuable service to the youth. And so it's important that they get this right, but we'll see what happens. And our last story is a very lighthearted one that Tim found, which I love. The headline here is from People Magazine. After family excludes her from a group trip because she couldn't afford it, woman wins the lottery and says she won't be sharing the winnings. So this woman was invited on a family vacation. It was too expensive for her, but the family didn't want to pay for it. And so they all went on the trip together and left her out of it. A little while later, she buys a winning lottery ticket and comes out, and she wins over $200 million, or $2 million, I'm sorry. But she's decided to use the money wisely. She paid off debt, invested, and set aside some for fun. And she said, I didn't tell my family right away because I didn't want them to treat me differently. Well, they did come calling when they found out, and they had their hand out, right?
Right. No, she said it wasn't until she bought a car that they started asking where this money had come from. And then when she told them she won the lottery, they were furious. Whether because they said, how come you didn't tell us right away? And they had labeled it family money and that she should share it, which I thought was great.
Family money.
Yeah, this was family money. This was
ticket,
different.
Right?
Yeah, because they said to her, she said to them, well, you didn't include me in the trip. And, because you said budgets were tight. And they said, well, this is different. This is family money. And so one sister wanted her to pay off student loans. The brother asked her to buy him a house. And she just said, I'm not obligated to share this with anybody. I agree with her.
Completely.
Don't you?
Yeah, I didn't even bat an eyelash. When I read this, I was like, no way. She walked in. She bought the ticket. Maybe she bought it while they were on vacation without her.
Because
she couldn't pay for the trip, right?
I don't have this sort of family dynamic where I've been ostracized by family. I don't know if you have.
No.
So I can't imagine this, because I certainly, if I had won winnings, and I would certainly want to help out.
Yeah.
Right. I would want to help out friends and family. But I thought this was funny. But if you treat me bad, guess what? I'm going to get
you.
I'll get you.
Yeah. All right. At the top of the podcast, I mentioned that a fantastic partner of ours here, TFG Unbund, is Critics' Choice Video. They're America's classic movie and TV authority since 1987. We would like it if you could visit their site by going through rsfocusgroupradio.com, click on their logo, and start going down the rabbit hole. Tons of things to choose from at Critics' Choice Video. It's movies, TV, shows, toys, gifts, books. It's a whole range of stuff. I happened to find something on the landing page that just made me smile. It reminded me of my dad, actually. And it's a DVD. It's really inexpensive, and it's the best of Benny Hill, the early years. And I
said your dad loved Benny Hill.
Oh my God, did he adore? And it was all slapstick and sexist in a way. You know, it's so typical, right? And I just remember watching Benny Hill, and so I saw this. I'm like, boy, this might be fun to get, the early years on DVD.
I always love, and they would always confuse signs. Like, I remember there was one for the therapist, and the way that they hyphenated was the rapist, you know, it was always, but it's that kind of humor. So, hey, head over to focusgroupradio.com and click on the Critics' Choice Video logo. As John said, it's America's classic and movie TV authority since 1987. There's some great deals going on right now this winter with free shipping and some other specials they have running all the time. Aside from movies and TV, there's all kinds of things like music and books and toys and gifts and a number of great things. So be sure to support them, because we're certainly thankful that they've supported us since we've started here on TFG Unbuttoned, and we appreciate their support of us and your support of them. So we hope everybody has a delightful week, and be sure to catch our show, The Focus Group, with Tim Bennett and John Nash. You can find all of our shows and media housed at focusgroupradio.com. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time here on TFG Unbuttoned.
It's The Focus Group Unbuttoned with Tim Bennett and John Nash, available every Tuesday. Learn more about Tim and John, Unbuttoned, and all of the Focus Group platforms at focusgroupradio.com.